Dr. Brad Jones is the Assistant Governor of Financial Systems at the Reserve Bank of Australia and the Deputy Chair of the Payment System Board. He oversees the RBA's work as a member of the Council of Financial Regulators, looking after financial stability, payments policy, including the CBDC. He joined the RBA in 2018, serving as the head of International Department and then the head of Economic Analysis. Before joining the RBA, he was a senior advisor at the IMF, another one of those intergalactic organisations in Washington, D.C. He held macroeconomic research and investment responsibilities at Deutsche Bank and, of course, is a fellow at the Cambridge University Judge Business School. Please welcome Dr. Brad Jones to the stage.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We've seen through history time and again that great bursts of financial innovation generated really profound implications for society. Larry Summers reminded us recently that money shapes economies, economies shape nations, and nations shape history. Fast forward to today, and rapid innovations in technology and structural change in the financial economy is again raising important questions about whether our monetary arrangements are fit for purpose, this time in the digital age. It's great to be here at Intersect. This is a really important forum where members of the policy-making, academic community and industry can come together to discuss issues that are going to shape our financial future. It's also timely because in about half an hour, the RBA and Treasury will publish their first ever joint paper on CBDC and the future of digital money in Australia. This is the latest initiative to emerge from the RBA's expanding work program on the future of money. And I'm here to highlight three messages from this work. First, with a strong endorsement of the Payment System Board, I can confirm that the RBA is making a strategic commitment to prioritise its work agenda on wholesale digital money and infrastructure, including wholesale CBDC, rather than retail CBDC. At the present time, we assess the benefits to the economy as more promising and the challenges less problematic for a wholesale CBDC compared to a retail version. This recognises that unlike a retail CBDC that would be issued for general use among the public, a wholesale CBDC would represent more of an evolution than revolution in our monetary arrangements. It also recognises the stabilising role of central bank money in the settlement of wholesale market transactions, particularly in markets that are or could be systemically important. Second, we're publicly committing to a three-year applied research program on the future of digital money. This has got a number of elements. Our most immediate priority is to launch a new project with industry on wholesale CBDC and tokenised commercial bank deposits. The focus here will be on understanding how new ledger arrangements and concepts like programmability and atomic settlement in tokenised markets could unlock benefits for the Australian financial system and the Australian economy. We don't have all the answers here, so we look forward to engaging with industry partners who have an ability and an appetite to innovate with the national interest in mind. And third, the view of the RBA and the Treasury is that if a public policy case ever emerged in favour of issuing a retail CBDC, the Australian government would be the ultimate decision authority and it would almost certainly require legislative change. In the case of a wholesale CBDC, the decision-making and legislative implications would depend on how transformative the new arrangements were, but in either case, you should expect close engagement between the RBA, the Treasury, and government. So with those three messages out of the way, let me quickly take stock of our current monetary arrangements. There are three forms of money in Australia today: physical cash, exchange settlement balances, ES balances, and commercial bank deposits. The latter two are digital, by which I mean they exist only on electronic ledgers. Commercial banks issue deposits that are accessible to the public. ES balances are issued by the RBA to eligible financial institutions for monetary and financial stability purposes, including to facilitate the settlement of payments. These arrangements form our two-tier monetary system, which reflects the comparative advantage of the public and the private sectors. Central banks don't have a comparative advantage in providing customer-facing services directly to households and firms. Rather, they focus on supplying foundational public goods, which you can think of as like the base tier in this two-tier system, which includes providing a safe settlement asset, essential infrastructure, and a level playing field for competition. This enables private innovation in money and payment services, or the top tier, which can lead to more value at reduced cost for households and firms. Central bank money is available to the public, but takes a physical form, banknotes, and fewer Australians are choosing to transact in it. You can see here the share of transactions occurring in cash declined from 62 to 13% in Australia between 2010 and 2022. As elsewhere, the Australian public holds virtually all their money in bank deposits. It's reasonable to ask at this point, if digital money is already so dominant in Australia as elsewhere, then what is the big deal about a CBDC? At one level, my sense is that much of the intention and the intrigue follows from CBDC connecting to quite deeply held views about the rights of citizens and the role and obligations of the state. This includes issues of safety, privacy, freedom, sovereignty, and even geopolitics, issues that put us quite squarely in political economy territory, which is not exactly the natural habitat of most central bankers. This might also explain why public debates over retail CBDC have been so hotly contested in some parts of the world. Let me now turn to retail CBDC considerations in Australia. A retail CBDC would represent a very significant change to our financial arrangements. Our assessment is that the potential benefits of a retail CBDC are largely modest or uncertain at the present time relative to the challenges it would introduce. Most of the arguments we observe internationally in support of a retail CBDC reflect issues that are either of limited relevance to Australia or where it's not obvious that a retail CBDC would best address them. Take, for instance, offline resilience. The digitisation of commerce and payments has yielded significant efficiency gains, but it's also made us vulnerable to disruptions to our digital infrastructure. Many countries are uplifting their crisis preparedness arrangements in response to national security threats and the risk of natural disasters. Social cohesion, not just economic disruption, is foremost in mind here. However, the processing of payments during electricity or telecommunication outages requires an offline capability first and foremost. This needn't require a retail CBDC per se. And though more work is absolutely needed, some card payment terminals operated by merchants in Australia are already capable of accepting payments offline. Some countries are also reconsidering the backup role that physical cash might play for short-term transactional purposes, although access to and acceptance of cash still requires a supporting offline capability. What then about the monetary sovereignty argument? If cash usage continues to decline, as some have suggested that a retail CBDC might be needed to prevent currency substitution, which would compromise domestic policy objectives. But the history of currency substitution suggests this risk is gravest in countries where institutions and the rule of law are weak and where residents and foreign investors have good reason to question the integrity of the domestic currency, conditions that are not apparent in Australia. While it's certainly possible that a big tech firm launches another global stablecoin initiative, there's now a concerted international effort to closely regulate any such move. Should the US ever issue a retail CBDC, some countries may well reconsider their position given the global role of the US dollar. But there is no momentum behind a retail CBDC in American political or policy circles. And aside from the legal impediments, I find it inconceivable that a digital Chinese yuan or digital euro would circulate as the currency of choice for Australians. What then about the idea that central bank money is needed to ensure that public and private money continue to be interchangeable at par? It's certainly a key feature of our current monetary arrangements that bank deposits are interchangeable with central bank money, dollar for dollar. This is called the singleness of money. This spares households and merchants from wasting resources in trying to reprice the credit risk of different issuers of money. That was a lesson learned the hard way from the wildcat free banking era in the United States. It's been suggested that if physical cash was no longer available to the public, we might need a retail CBDC to ensure that private money retained its value because it would still be interchangeable at par with central bank money. However, most central banks have no plans to eradicate physical cash. And central banks already support the singleness of money in various ways, including by settling banks' net payment claims at par in central bank money. What then about safety arguments? It's certainly true that a retail CBDC would be free of credit and liquidity risk and would mean that households still had the choice of transacting in central bank money if cash was unavailable or unusable. But the international evidence that households value the safety of central bank money is actually very mixed in advanced economies. We do observe cash holdings increasing during periods of economic uncertainty, though it's unclear if that owes to the risk-free status of cash or to the fact that we can touch it. Research by RBA staff suggests that Australian households would attach little value to the riskless nature of a CBDC. This might reflect the limited experience of Australians with bank failures and or the range of measures that are in place to support public confidence in the money we deposit at banks. Would a retail CBDC offer more privacy? International views on the privacy implications of a retail CBDC vary widely. In some countries, residents fear a CBDC could be used as a surveillance tool of the state. Others find comfort in central banks not having the incentives to exploit personal transaction data, as might private service providers. In any event, few central banks are considering a version of retail CBDC that would be fully anonymous, given their responsibilities to mitigate financial crime. And research by RBA staff has indicated that privacy considerations would not be front of mind for Australian households in deciding whether to transact in a retail CBDC. What then about efficiency arguments? Countries without a fast payment system are often most interested in a retail CBDC. But we're fortunate here in Australia to have the new payments platform that enables payments to be processed and settled in near real time on a 24/7, 365 basis. And regulation and competition have also lowered digital payment costs in Australia over the past two decades. That said, the extent to which a retail CBDC could further reduce payment costs is yet to be fully assessed and would depend on design choices. We're certainly sympathetic to the idea that a retail CBDC might spawn a range of new payment services, though this was part of the motivation for last year's pilot project, which did not surface compelling retail use cases. And finally, there's the financial inclusion argument in favour of a retail CBDC. The idea here is that it could open up access to financial services. Yet this argument has most relevance in emerging market economies. Australian households are already among the most banked in the world. And research by RBA staff has found that among Australians who continue to rely on physical cash, issues like poor internet access and low confidence with digital modes of transacting are particularly relevant. It's not clear how a retail CBDC would address these issues. So if the benefits of a retail CBDC in Australia are modest or uncertain at present, what about the drawbacks? Three stand out here: higher borrowing costs, bank runs, and challenges with monetary policy implementation. Australia has a bank-based financial system. The share of bank funding sourced from domestic deposits has risen to around 60%. Should households decide to place their liquid assets in a retail CBDC rather than bank deposits, banks would have to offer higher deposit rates and or tap more volatile or costly sources of funding, costs that could be passed back onto borrowers. Or they could cut back on extending credit. The idea that central banks should furnish banks with cheap loans as compensation for losing low-cost household deposits is highly problematic. And a more significant concern is that a retail CBDC could increase the threat of bank runs. In times of stress, access to a risk-free CBDC would increase the ability of panicked households to switch out of bank deposits en masse. In Australia, most bank deposits are held by households and are redeemable on demand. The events at Silicon Valley Bank last year offered a cautionary tale over the risk of rapid-fire bank runs in the digital age, one that could be magnified if bank deposits were convertible into a CBDC at the touch of a smartphone. Under a simplistic hypothetical scenario, RBA staff examine the effects on bank liquidity if Australian households simultaneously transferred $5,000 from their deposit account into a retail CBDC. This is a purely illustrative exercise, very simplistic, but what it showed was that banks' liquidity buffers could decline by 40 to 60%, all else equal, and could put them close to minimum internal thresholds. Central banks have examined measures that could forestall or limit the effects of bank runs involving CBDC through some combination of limits on CBDC holdings, penalties on bank deposit withdrawals, negative interest rates on CBDC in periods of stress. But what these measures have in common is an effort to restrict the use of a CBDC, which to my mind at least raises the question of whether the benefits of a CBDC would be forfeited in the process. There's a final complication here relating to monetary policy implementation. The stock of household deposits is very large relative to most central bank balance sheets and the markets they operate in. If there were a significant uptake of retail CBDC, it could therefore require a large program of open market operations and have the potential to disrupt functioning in key financial markets. Separately, monetary policy transmission could be affected by disintermediation of the banking system, given its key role in setting the interest rates that influence saving and investment decisions. And while it's been suggested that a retail CBDC could enhance policy transmission at the lower bound if it was remunerated at a negative interest rate, this would require phasing out physical cash, which Australia has no plans to do. Indeed, most central banks consider a retail CBDC analogous to a digital banknote that would complement physical cash, not replace it, meaning it would not bear an interest rate. Let's now turn to a wholesale CBDC, where the context is fundamentally different because central banks already have a long history of issuing digital money to financial institutions in support of their monetary and financial stability objectives. And so in this sense, a wholesale CBDC would be more evolutionary than revolutionary. Like ES balances, a wholesale CBDC would be issued to financial institutions and serve as the ultimate safe asset in the settlement of wholesale market transactions. What is new is that it could exist on different types of ledgers, centralised or decentralised, possibly alongside tokenised assets, and offer greater functionality than today's ES balances. This could support asset settlement and other wholesale payments in new ways. The larger question here is how could the functioning of existing wholesale markets be enhanced and new ones supported through innovation in digital money, assets, and supporting infrastructure? In some respects, innovation in wholesale markets has been less impressive than in retail payments. To cite one domestic example, I find it striking that price discovery and placement in the $780 billion market for bank term deposits, which comprises one quarter of bank funding in this country, still largely occurs over emailed spreadsheets and phone calls in an opaque, labour-intensive way that has changed little in 25 years. This begs the question, is this the best we can do? More generally, most advanced economy central banks are actively exploring opportunities to uplift the functioning of their wholesale markets. One area is by reducing counterparty and operational risks and improving capital efficiency. This might be achieved, for instance, by shrinking the time between trade execution and settlement, where money and assets exist on the same ledger. Another area is by increasing informational transparency and auditability. Here, researchers are examining how new forms of ledgers and assets could facilitate more transparency, including in greenfield markets where the digital representation of assets could be updated and verifiable in real time. Another area relates to increasing liquidity and the ability to transact. This could be supported by better informational efficiency, 24/7 trading hours, and the fractionalisation and programmability of assets. The final area is focused on reducing intermediary and compliance costs. Here, programmability could potentially cut through layers of manual processes in the transaction lifecycle, including the automation of compliance checks and asset servicing tasks. This exploratory research has seen central banks and industry probe the role that tokenisation might play in a future financial system. The programmability of tokens via smart contracts and the ability to reduce counterparty risk by atomically exchanging money and assets on the same ledger has been of particular interest in experimental research. When I first spoke about the opportunities and challenges associated with tokenisation in the Australian financial system a year ago, I noted the potential benefits were sufficiently interesting to warrant further investigation. As a case in point, if tokenisation produced just a small share of the benefits of earlier periods of innovation in wholesale markets, then the aggregate cost savings to investors and issuers in the Australian financial markets could be substantial. That said, for all its promise, I should caution that tokenisation is not without its challenges. Work is well underway at the RBA and elsewhere to better assess whether the potential benefits of tokenisation stand up to closer scrutiny. For instance, in a world of atomic settlement, orders would likely need to be pre-funded, which would increase liquidity requirements as netting benefits would be lost. Liquidity conditions could also worsen if trading volumes were fragmented between new platforms and traditional infrastructure. We know that new infrastructure is time intensive to establish, so tokenized markets would need to be interoperable with traditional infrastructure for a considerable period. And there is still some way to go in resolving governance and legal issues involving smart contracts and tokenized securities. A range of non-functional considerations also need to be better understood, including the impact on central bank balance sheets from wholesale CBDC issuance and the trade-offs between transaction processing speed and ledger security. An even larger issue relates to the monetary and financial stability implications of widening access arrangements to wholesale central bank money. It's possible that a significant efficiency uplift in trading, clearing, and settlement in our wholesale markets could be achieved without the issuance of a wholesale CBDC. But given the principles for financial market infrastructures emphasise the benefits from conducting settlement in central bank money, We expect it to continue to have an important anchoring role in any market that is or could be systemically important. Let me now turn to our roadmap. We're setting out here for the first time the key components of a three-year digital money work plan for the RBA and Treasury. Our most immediate priority is to launch the public phase of Project Acacia. Project Acacia aims to build on the lessons from our CBDC pilot last year by focusing on opportunities to uplift the efficiency, transparency, and resilience of wholesale markets through tokenized money, assets, and new settlement infrastructure. In October, the RBA, alongside our research partners at the DFCRC, will publish a consultation paper inviting industry engagement. A second step is to launch industry and academic CBDC advisory forums in the first half of next year. We've benefited significantly from engagement with industry and the academic community on various CBDC issues over recent years, and we now seek to put more structure around this dialogue. These forums would play a similar role to those the RBA has convened in recent years with economists from industry and academia to hear different views on monetary policy issues. A third initiative to begin next year builds on a lesson from last year's CBDC pilot and will involve supporting reforms to a regulatory sandbox for financial innovation, including digital money and infrastructure. Industry feedback suggests the existing sandbox could be enhanced. And so Treasury will work with government to consider the recommendations of an independent review into the sandbox and, where appropriate, implement reforms. A fourth initiative commencing later next year may involve a series of deliberative workshops on retail CBDC with the Australian community. Focus groups could include a broad cross-section of the population, as well as minority groups that can be sometimes underrepresented in public policy consultations. Recent international experience suggests that deliberative engagement of this sort can be a useful complement to more standard approaches. And finally, the RBA and Treasury are committed to reassessing the benefits of a retail CBDC with a follow-up paper to be published in 2027. By this time, we will have had an opportunity to reflect on feedback from community engagement and to conduct further research into the implications of different design options. And there should also be a richer vein of international experience to draw on. Let me now change gears and say a brief word about the legal and decision-making considerations for CBDC. As a practical matter, any form of CBDC would be issued by the RBA. However, the introduction of a retail CBDC would raise important political economy issues and give rise to significant changes to Australia's financial arrangements. As such, the Australian government would ultimately decide whether to introduce a retail CBDC. Enabling a legislation would very likely be required, consistent with the international experience. In the case of wholesale CBDC, the legal, regulatory, and primary decision-making implications would depend on the design and the scope of its use. But as a general guide, the more transformative the proposed arrangements, the more likely it is that supporting legislative change and active government engagement would be required. And we would view it as preferable to first identify the features of a CBDC that were most desirable from a policy perspective and then make necessary amendments to legislation rather than compromise any design features in an effort to give a CBDC legal status under current legislation. Bottom line, it would be safe to assume that the RBA, Treasury, and Australian government would closely consult ahead of any decision to issue a CBDC should a public policy case emerge. So let me sum up. At the present time, we assess the potential benefits as more promising and the challenges less problematic for wholesale CBDC compared to the retail variant. Australians are generally well served by a safe, efficient, and innovative retail payment system. And given the benefits of a retail CBDC in Australia appear modest at present, and a retail CBDC would create serious challenges for financial stability and monetary policy. We're yet to see a strong public policy case emerge for issuing a retail CBDC. In jurisdictions that have issued a retail CBDC, which is exclusively lower income countries, or in those that are indicating it's quite possible in coming years, we see the main motivations there as having less relevance in the Australian context. Nevertheless, we recognise the retail payments landscape is evolving rapidly and the implications of a retail CBDC are yet to be fully understood, and so we will continue to examine these issues, including as more international evidence comes to light. In the meantime, the role that a wholesale CBDC and other forms of digital money and infrastructure upgrades could play in enhancing the functioning of our wholesale markets will be the principal focus of our future work program. Whatever the shape of future innovation in our financial system, it's reasonable to expect central bank money will continue to serve as the ultimate safe asset, particularly in systemically important markets. In closing, the question of how we might arrange our monetary system to better support the Australian economy in the digital age is a strategic priority for the RBA. We look forward to engaging with you and your ideas in the period ahead on how this might best be achieved. Thank you.
Before you shoot through, we do have our first panel coming up, but Dr. Jones has just said he's happy to take any questions. We have a microphone here. Here's your chance. Anyone itching on this one, or are you all too busy counting your Bitcoin right now? Any questions? Please, sir, head to the microphone. Have a crack. And thank you for that.
Thanks, Brad, for that. Just have a curiosity question more than anything. Does anything around wholesale digital currency impact superannuation cash funds or the cash in superannuation funds?
Not in a particularly obvious way. I mean, there would be a question. One point of connectivity would be the access arrangements for wholesale central bank money. So, for instance, who could move into a wholesale CBDC? Right now, our current system of exchange settlement balances, the current form of wholesale digital money we do have available, is made available to principally banks and other select institutions that are primarily involved in the settlement of payments. So we haven't extended that more broadly. At some point in the future, there will have to be a discussion around access arrangements to wholesale CBDC, whether it would be made available more broadly, say to corporations, possibly to other institutions that are not involved in clearing and settlement. That would have potentially quite profound implications if it was made more widely available. The RBA's balance sheet could potentially expand very dramatically, but at the moment that's not a principal area of focus.
Thank you.